All right, we are live. Well, hello, Sam. You want to introduce yourself for some of the people here who haven't seen you before?
I think most people will have seen me before, I hope. But
I think so
yeah,
too.
I'm Samuel Urban, illegitimate scholar. I do like mainstream archaeology. I talk about mainstream archaeology, mainstream background in it, not like to the level of PhD, but I've done it, and anthropology, culture anthropology, and Flint Dibble scared of me.
Yeah, he's scared of pretty much anybody that disagrees with him. But you've done a good job of hammering at him with the things that you already know about, and by basically the shipwreck stuff in particular, you really cornered him on that one brutally.
I mean, he got all of it wrong. There's a long form video on my channel that goes over it, as well as some others with Flint Dibble. But the main stuff is not just the shipwreck, but broadly the maritime archaeology stuff. And he just got all of it wrong. He has no mainstream background in it. I do have a little bit in it. And do you want me to rehash the points, if I can even remember them? It's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just really quick before you wait, like you say, he it's not his field of expertise. He does seeds and food, and you know, it's hard to find fish bones at sea. So that's about, you're definitely not finding many seeds, right? Unless you've got that Kevin Costner Waterworld gills going. But
yeah,
go ahead now. Bullet point us.
He presented his argument as against Graham Hancock. That's how long ago this was. But he presented his argument against Graham Hancock, saying that he could disprove Graham Hancock's hypothesis. Now, I just believe that Flint Dibble did not disprove Graham Hancock's hypothesis. And part of his argument was based on the underwater archaeology that we have, shipwrecks and other things. But he presented it in an absolutely, he presented it in a way that was not actually consistent with what the record says. Some of the sites that he himself shared, he said that there was this hunting wall that dated to the Younger Dryas, in to show evidence that things could survive underwater for thousands of years. I think the word he used was indefinitely. I don't remember if that was exactly it, but he said this is not true. Things underwater degrade. You made that point as well in one of your videos.
Yeah, he said, if I remember right, specifically, like the point that he was getting at was that things underwater just, they don't rot. It doesn't matter how long it is. The time, something about like temporal restraints don't matter, some shit like that, where just straight up.
It's in both of our videos on this.
Yeah. Everybody, really quickly, if you're interested, Sam's channel is the top link below. So if you're not subscribed to him already and you like that sort of stuff, it's down there. And Michael Button even hung out with him recently, or last time that you were doing stuff too terribly. You've taken a minute off, I've noticed.
I have, yeah. I've had some stuff, but I'm basically back now. I'm doing my backlog of work at this point, and I've got some episodes to release, and then I've got some long-form stuff in the works. I can get into that in a minute, unless you want
to. No, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you too hard. Go ahead and.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I have been. Yeah, Michael Button came on my channel recently as well. Love that guy. I was able to release my episode with him the same week his Joe Rogan episode released. So that was great. But with Flint Dibble, the underwater stuff, he presented. Oh, the hunting wall. He presented this as a hunting wall from the Younger Dryas period, but it's not really dated to the Younger Dryas. It's dated to the Younger Dryas or the early Holocene. So it's dated to this kind of transition period. And the range of dates that they have is a couple thousand years. And that is, they have a couple thousand years because they took multiple dated remains of organic material in different absolute dating methods. I think they used luminescence dating, and they used radiocarbon dating to date organic material, but they didn't actually even find any human artifacts to date this. So they got a geologist to say that the hunting wall was a hunting wall, that it was human in origin, anthropogenic, whatever word they use for that. And I don't necessarily disagree with that take, but it does fly in the face of some other stuff that Flint Dibble has said relating to the dating of actual walls saying that you can date a wall based on getting soil from under the wall. And that's not even what they did in that case. It wasn't under, it was next to it. And this was relevant with their discussion, there being Graham and Flint's on the dating of Göbekli Tepe. I'm sorry, not Göbekli Tepe, Gunung Padang.
Thank you.
But that's a digression. He also, he claimed that there were over 12,000 sites in the Ice Age record. There were, I think, 3,000 or 4,000. There weren't 12,000 sites. That's from their own website. And he cited shipwreck data from 99%, the 1800s, 1900s, and modern, as being evidence of the vast amount of archaeological remains underwater, the vast amount of shipwrecks. He even claimed that we've excavated thousands of shipwrecks, which is just not true.
Not even
he got everything wrong, and his argument is ridiculous. So yeah, he was wrong. And he won't debate me on it. He won't even address my positions, but he will periodically attack me as a person rather than attacking the information, because he can't, because he's wrong and he's a fraud.
That's I've gone after him quite a bit because of that. He started with these guys making it personal, making it it's like they don't seem to understand that you can't go around saying that people are totally not racist but ... and not get people pissed off. And that's the Hadrian's Wall post that Emerald Wolf was talking about. It's what I was telling you just before we got on. I was arguing with this bonehead on Twitter for a couple, 3 days, and they were making the argument that the idea that the medieval cathedrals were built by ancient high technology is the same as saying the pyramids were built by ancient high technology. And so I just kept pushing him on this and getting him to over and over again say context means nothing to this. This is all about similar arguments. And then pushing him on the race issue, or that came up next with his own stuff. But the point is, I get him to multiple times admit that it has nothing to do with context. It's all about just the argument, just the logic behind the argument. So then I went to Hadrian's Wall. So, okay, Hadrian's Wall, which for those of you who don't know, is built by the Romans to separate the badasses in England from the more passive ones, right? Where the parts they had pacified to the parts they were still fighting with. But my post, I said that clearly this is just archaeologists saying that the Britons weren't technologically sophisticated enough to build a wall, and they're stealing the credit from indigenous people and giving it to the Romans. And I'm going to do Baalbek next, because that was built by the Lebanese, whatever, those guys with the blue hair. they were carrying those big rocks around.
They were driving Subarus. They had the rocks in the backs of the Subarus. Yeah, I drive a Subaru, to be clear. Fantastic. This is a common argument that I see in regards to anywhere that's outside the first world. Basically, it's like, okay, this object, this city, this megalithic place is found in this location that this culture now controls, so it must belong to that culture. And that's just never true. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, it's not never true. It's just, it's not true enough even to the point that you would assume it. Like, the Aztecs did not build Tenochtitlan. They moved in. That's assumed, but it was very recent. And the idea that this is just racist, that this is racist, it's not an argument that's based in any sort of scientific merit. It's an argument that's trying to silence dissent for an academic opinion based on social positions. And that is pseudo-archaeology. I would call that, probably. Other examples of this, Dublin. I mean, Dublin was built by it's the capital of Ireland. It wasn't built by the Irish. It was built by Vikings or Scandinavians. Yeah. Well, this is not racist against the Irish to say.
No, it's not. What the thing here, I think not only do they use it to stop the arguments, but I do think a lot of them are, it's a psychological, they see things from that perspective because that's the kind of person they are. They know, because that's what archaeology has done so much of. I guess the best way of putting it is, like, say you're hanging out with four of your friends in one of their houses, and you've all got your wallets on the table because you're playing poker. Now, if you're all buddies and y'all get up to leave the table for to go outside to have a cigarette. The guy that turns around is like, shouldn't we grab our wallets? He's the motherfucker that'll steal your goddamn wallet if you all go outside. The other ones are, they don't even think that way, but it's in his mind. So to me, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, of course you guys are stealing credit because that's what we do. And it, I mean, even if they don't feel that way today, they know that that's the history of their field repeatedly. Like the mound builder myth is a great idea. It's like all the stuff that they look at and try to attribute to guys like Graham today. And they have to like staple it on as a sidecar because it's not shit that Graham personally says. It's just he'll quote some dude that also said this other goofy shit, like the Norse had to have scratched Dighton Rock because Indian too dumb to scratch rock. So they'll be like, oh, well, Graham cited this guy who also said this. It's like, dude, you guys were the one. That guy was a fucking archaeologist, man. He was an anthropologist, right?
Yeah,
so
like,
what the hell are you on about? You every time you guys cite one of his papers, do you have a little spot that says, no, this guy was really bad. We had to like go through and he used to build. Like, come on, dude, this is stupid.
Yeah, there was one of them that they were using evidence that Graham had. I traced back this source back to this professor of classics. I mean, the fields in the 19th century were a little bit different than they are today. So it was this antiquities professor from the University of Ohio was the source of this myth that Graham was citing that they were calling racist. And the guy was like a prestigious professor that was in, I wish I remember the name of the order, but it was this group of scholars that includes like 11 US presidents that's still around. It's, I think, somewhere around Harvard, like location wise. I wish I remembered, but it's like he was a prestigious professor in academia 150 years ago. And now instead of arguing why he's wrong, they're not arguing from a place of academics why he's wrong. They're arguing from a place of this is a racist opinion and it must be false. And that's pseudo-archaeology. You can't do that. If you decide that a fact or an opinion or a perspective or an argument is racist, that's fine. It can be racist all you want, but also argue against its merits at the same time. If not, you have no credibility to say what you're saying. And you're showing that you're willing to allow your social views to dilute your scientific and academic opinions.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, I mean, really the thing that we end up with is, I've said this one so many times, but these guys have they know that their field isn't, the conclusions that they make aren't as scientific. You can use science to get where they're going, but the conclusions that they make, generally speaking, are not scientific conclusions. And that's where, you know, I was reading a paper that that I did on my carbon dating video I did last week. And what the paper talked about, it discussed the problem with the carbon dating paper done in 2001. And it says that the issue was that the paper didn't have a clear conclusion. And therefore, it just kind of languished. It didn't get noticed and didn't get pointed out. And that's really, that speaks volumes. It's like, how many of my videos do I end with, we need more research. I don't fucking know. Sorry, guys. And that's just the reality of the way things are. I mean, we just don't know. And when somebody who claims to be a scientist says, we don't know, I mean, to me, that puts them in a higher spot, like because we clearly most things we don't like we're learning. We're always in that learning spot.
And this is there's an incentive structure here, just in general for humans, that I think that people give more attention to strong arguments, to someone making a not necessarily an outlandish claim, but a big claim. That's something that's going to get more attention. And this is true. You can see this in a lot of different places. You can see it in mainstream media as well as social media. Like for a post to be successful on X, taking a harsh, arguable stance that can be argued against, that people are passionate about, either in the pro or the con against it is going to get a lot more attention. It's going to get a lot more discussion. So often what will happen is if somebody is making a contribution that isn't necessarily to the point of arguing a larger statement, it's not going to get as much attention or discussion surrounding it. And I see this everywhere, including, you know, there was probably a couple of years ago, there was a paper that was written that said, oh, women evolved to hunt. And the paper was just nonsense. It was written by two archaeologists who seemed to have done, I looked at their backgrounds. I always do this when I'm talking about a paper. I want to know the context for what's being put out there. And they were doing solid work. One of them was doing solid work on Neanderthals. The other one was, I don't remember as much. I wasn't as impressed by it, but still solid, solid work. It just wasn't getting a lot of attention. They were making incremental improvements that's necessary for creating a broad view of history and aggregate in the work of hundreds of academics. But that type of stuff, individuals will be lost in the sea of information that they've helped to produce. So that's not the way to get noticed. The way to get noticed is by making really, really big claims that people will pay attention to, and they could be bullshit, but it actually, a lot of times it doesn't matter that it's bullshit.
Yeah, and they end up doing, it's a very diminishing returns way of looking at things. I mean, you know, as a dumbass who does the YouTube thing, it's like if you go out and you just like everything that you put out there. For example, I follow, I'll watch a lot of times while I'm doing other stuff, I'll have running in the background or something, true crime type of crap. And the one channel that I completely just blocked the channel from showing up in my feed, that I noticed every one of their videos was like serial killer, blah, 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 serial killer, blah, blah, blah. But then you watch it, and it's just about some dude who killed his wife, or it's like, this isn't a serial killer. But so it's like, I mean, it's, that's a minor thing, but that kind of, the kind of clickbaity thing, like I'm working on, the video should be up hopefully tomorrow. On the that recent paper about the 30,000-year-old writing, 40,000-year-old writing that they were talking about, right? Okay, that's like reading the paper and stuff. It's like the pop culture headlines are ruling the day on this. This is a paper about the potential origins of proto writing, and they're using some science and stuff. But this is a really boring paper, and it's like, like doing the video, it's like basically a lot of what I'm doing is just breaking this down and making it palatable, because it's just so, just so and not fun. But I should address what Rue here said. If I have a theory and design an experiment that supports a theory only, have I proven anything at all, or have I just done propaganda? Well, obviously, you've just done propaganda. That's much like your statement there. You're leading the audience, right? You know exactly where to take them. So it's and that's not talking shit about you, Rue. It's just exactly how that's how rhetoric works, right?
I think it was a bit of a leading question from Rue there, which
I think Rue is expecting me to be honest about these sort of things. If you're expecting me to be honest, you're in the wrong channel. I'm sure there's a Professor Dave Link somewhere. 757.
That question is itself doing that. It is itself attempting to prove a certain point by asking the question itself. It's sorry, continue.
No, you're fine. No, I was looking here at pi equals AI generated pyramid scan. So that's an interesting idea. I want those AI generated parts of the pyramid scans really are so intriguing to me. What I think probably the funniest thing about it, to keep in theme with the dogs on a leash for this video, it's hilarious how quickly the knee-jerk reaction came from people who don't know the first fucking thing about synthetic aperture radar. And it's like, you go get some person, like Flint went and got some expert that works with this stuff for a long time. And it's like, even she didn't lay it out that it's like, this stuff has evolved over time massively. Our ability to translate that data. And now that we have AI, I mean, there is things that AI can suss that we can't. Now, I understand the skepticism, but that's all purely due to implications. And you see the exact same thing right now with the reaction to that paper about writing, or Alexander Marshak, who did he did this work with the Ordnations and talking about like moon patterns and stuff, moon tracking on the bones. It's like, this is a big part of that paper that they just came out, was like they cited this Marshak's work probably half a dozen times. And he talked about like how they would recording data like 35, 40,000 years ago, but like lunar alignments and stuff. And his work was pushed back on some, but nothing at all like the work of Dr. Martin Sweatman. And Sweatman's aligned with Graham, and Marshak was aligned with mainstream academia. He was doing it because NASA put him up to it. And so even though Sweatman's work is like way more robust, if you read the two papers, Marshak's work comparatively is almost laughable. Sweatman's like, I'm bringing in statistical analysis. We're going to do this, this, and this. Marshak's like, that looks to me more or less like this could be. Yeah. But
it's vibes. Academia, like so much of it is just vibes.
And as well it should be, because I mean, like, you know, like you would code language and stuff. This coke, the word coke right there doesn't mean shit to a lot of things, because they don't have the vibes in their head, right? The software ain't there. But anyway, just it's so funny to me the way Sweatman is just shit on, as opposed to the other guy's work. Yeah, it's especially archaeoastronomy. This writing paper, all manner of these things. These guys, they use the letters next to their name. They use their credentials, but they step outside of their field. And that would be like me saying, I worked construction all my life. Let me tell you all about plumbing. It's like, fucking, I did a little bit of plumbing, but I didn't do very much.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I think for a lot of people, most regular people, even people that are interested in this type of stuff are almost never going to read the actual paper itself, much less be able to understand it. Like some of these peer reviewed academic papers, I am able to read and understand and even form an argument on, but often there are specific subfields even within archaeology, but especially once you get into the geological elements of it, either a geological paper itself or a geological portion of an otherwise anthropology paper, I can't evaluate that. I can't even understand it. So what they're able to do is people that are credentialed are able to make kind of whatever argument they want, as long as someone else who has an equal amount of credentials in the eyes of any individual viewer, watcher, reader, they're able to kind of claim whatever they want. And if the power of that idea behind it, including motivations that might be social or political, people will just believe them because they want to. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. It's very much the reality of it. It's the example that I love using on this one is the way that people's flip-flopped when Twitter got sold to Elon Musk. And then it went from the right-wingers all saying, you know, it's terrible to see somebody banned from a platform like Twitter for hate speech, because that's such an arbitrary thing and you got to be careful. And people, you know, so you got to be careful. That's a violation of free speech. And the lefties are like, yeah, fuck you. This is a privately owned platform. You don't like it, kiss ass. Then Elon buys it and starts banning lefties that are talking shit to him. They're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hang on. That you can't ban somebody for hate speech. That's a violation of their free speech. And all the righties are like, fuck you. It's a privately owned platform. What do you want? And it's like, dude, this is, you got, you know, there's so many, and it's not all the people on either side. The point is that the flag gets held up a different direction and enough of the army turns and changes direction. It's like, oh fuck, that word useful idiots is, man, right? Social media has definitely amplified that to 11.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's if people want to believe something, it's easier for them to believe it.
And I think a lot of they feel empowered to, it feels good to do something. It feels good to make the world a better place. And it's even nicer when you can just do it sitting in your underwear, right?
Exactly.
Get on the toilet and I just fought racism.
Yeah. You can feel like you did something. Exactly. Yeah. In service of your beliefs that you're really not doing anything for, but it feels good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things I've been working on, you brought something up earlier, which I think was relevant to this, but I didn't want to segue the conversation, so I will eventually remember that based on what I'm saying. But have you heard of Margaret Mead?
I don't think so. So she was
basically the most famous anthropologist of the 20th century, cultural anthropologist. She was not an archaeologist. And she was a master student to get her PhD under the guy who is called the father of American anthropology, whose name is escaping me right now, but he's very important. And she did some field work on Samoa for, and she was, so this field work, and this is why I thought about it. This field work that she did was specifically in service of the father of American archaeology, who was her advisor, American anthropology rather. And he specifically wanted her, and his name is Franz Boas, who some people might've heard of, as well as Margaret Mead, to create information, basically. It was explicitly for the purpose of fighting this larger ideological battle of the 20th century in academia and culture broadly of nature versus nurture. And they were on the nurture side, that humans can and are mainly affected by their environment, rather than it being
genetically predetermined. Innately,
yeah, right. And that was the nature side. Obviously, it's a mix. I don't know why this was such a large argument where it's such a mix. But of course, it's the 1920s. This is the time of eugenics. This is pre-World War II, pre-big H word, which we're not really supposed to say on YouTube, that type of thing. So there was a different context for these ideas. But she gets sent
to
Samoa. She gets sent to American Samoa to study the mating habits, basically, of or courtship. There's a different word for it with humans. They're humans, not animals.
Rotten.
Yeah, so she goes there, she talks exclusively to girls, and she comes away with the conclusion, of course, based on talking to teenage girls doing this ethnographic work, that Samoans are all about free love, because these teenage girls were telling her that they were having different partners every day of the week, and they're allowed to be with whoever they want to, and all this stuff. And that information was published in a book that sold, I think, millions of copies. It was popular for a very long time, and it served the ideological argument that Franz Boas was involved in. And then another anthropologist who was inspired by her work, his name is Martin Freeman from New Zealand. And he goes there and finds that it's complete BS. There's a whole lot of stuff. But the point is that from the beginning of these fields, they have been affected by people trying to serve a particular cultural lens, a particular political lens. They're trying explicitly to serve their own interests and what information. So when we have studies that say what we want to, and this applies to anthropology or any other field, studies that say what people want them to say, there's a certain amount of selection bias in it, that things that are not convenient or positive towards a certain group of people that's in power, or any number of certain groups of people, that information is more likely to be found. And that might not make it untrue. It could make it untrue. But the information that they don't want to find, they're not even going to look for, or information that there isn't funding for, they're not going to look for it because there's no funding for it. Like with the seeds, how there's not a lot of research on fertilization, because why would there be? That doesn't serve farming in any way. It's the opposite of serving farming. Exactly. Yeah. And also, well, her first husband was one of the guys that pioneered the CIA. That's not a joke.
Oh, wow. No, yeah. You're dead on that. Science doesn't just tend to serve its benefactors, but in addition to this, it also has the biases of the people doing it, and the ideas that are that it's forced to be funneled through. Like the work of people being ostracized in all aspects of their field because of their opinions in one area. But really quickly, I should go ahead and address what Tyrecia 69, dude. Cool, man. I'm glad you didn't put 420 in your name too, because that would have been too much for me. But Why is it you people fail to understand logic? There is a difference between validity and soundness. This is the game being played. I mean, I won't argue that there's a difference between validity and soundness, obviously, but the game being played, like when an archaeology, I would say that the issue is the archaeologists or many of the scientists, but and YouTube debunkers and whatnot, they conflate this more than anybody else does. I'm myself saying, just because you make an argument that could be accurate, that is sound argument, doesn't mean that it's a valid argument. But the academia tries to make it out like we've decided that the Clovis people made it through the ice sheets at this period in history, and therefore this is the only acceptable answer. Oh, now we got another one. We've decided that the kelp highway hypothesis is now opened up. Now this is an open valid avenue of inquiry. So now Thor Heyerdahl could ask questions. Oh, two ladies dead. Fuck him. Oh, anyway, he was a racist, right? So it's just. I mean, the only game in my mind, the only real game that I see is they try to do the propaganda thing, but the game is in their own heads. These guys are lying to themselves I don't understand why the fuck they don't. A historian also references the same cuneiform tablet that an archaeologist does. A historian references the same carbon dates that an archaeologist does. A historian will reference the same stratigraphy that an archaeologist does. The only fucking difference is the archaeologist gathers the stratigraphy and calls himself a scientist. I mean, in all honesty, a historian knows enough to be like, I'm not a scientist, man. But archaeology, honestly, it's a true pseudoscience, in my opinion. It doesn't tick the boxes.
Yeah, I mean, I hate this argument because it's I guess it is important. Not your argument, but the argument, no, like the whole wide argument. I hate the argument of it because it's ego at the end of the day. It's who cares if your field is a science or not? I don't know why you would care. My main interest is cultural anthropology, which is certainly not a science. I don't think people argue that it is. I hope not. But something broadly being a science, a very broad field. I mean, anthropology, even archaeology is quite a broad field. You know, there's a big difference between doing seed archaeology and doing like megalithic archaeology and doing maritime archaeology. These are hugely different actions. They're hugely different. They require hugely different techniques and knowledge. They're completely different, but they're within one field. And whether or not, like, if a method or a technique is scientific, like radiocarbon dating, an absolute dating method that is very scientific, that doesn't necessarily mean that the field broadly is a science. It also doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a science, but whether or not it's a science itself, I don't know why that would have any bearing on anything, except perhaps for the credibility of the conclusions that people draw. And in the case of archaeology, the broad conclusions that they draw based on whatever number of scientific or unscientific methods that they use is still going to be an opinion based on argument. And it's not going to be set in stone like the amount of atoms in a helium, whatever. Okay. I'm not a science guy. I don't know if what I said makes sense, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. JT on Twitter, he asked about, like, he asked me what I think that science is doing, what I think archaeology would need to do in order to make itself a science. And in all honesty, it would need to quit. What I told him was it need to quit making these kind, like, quit trying to say that we know things for sure. Quit trying to make there are plenty of aspects of the endeavor that are scientific, but when at the end of the day, it's like phrenology. You know, I've got this book over here that's got these measurements on these Native American elongated skulls, and they're the only measurements you're going to find, and they're very scientific measurements. I mean, these guys didn't.
That's craniometry, not phrenology.
And that's the difference between between chemistry and between archaeology. This is you see what I'm saying. This, you can't, like, the reason that the phrenologists took those measurements is the same reason the archaeologists are taking measurements, and they're not using a. At the end of the day, what makes the phrenology bullshit is their conclusion. At the end of the day, that's what makes archaeology bullshit, is it tries to say this conclusion, it tries to put the conclusion way the fuck up here when it's, I talk about psychology all the time. It's you know, I know somebody who worked in brain scans, like as a neuroscientist taking neuro scans. And she would argue incessantly with psychologists, because psychologists would write a paper and then she would say, well, actually the neuroscans completely disagree with what your paper says. And they would get angry at her and just disregard the hard data. And it like makes me laugh, because I look at it at the way archaeology handles, say, like, the carbon dating that I recently covered, the carbon dating on the Great Pyramid, like Dave Farina tried to throw, I basically just ignored it for a while. I just didn't put much effort into him because I'd rather do other research, but it's easy enough to debunk the guy. And like he shows, uses this paper that's just a bunch of Bayesian modeling. That's all it is they take and they doctor the numbers before they enter their formula. They do a math formula that eliminates outliers, and they pushed everything to as most recent date as possible in order to get rid of the 200 to 300 year gap in the carbon dating of the Great Pyramid and of the Fourth Dynasty to the written record. And it's like, it's not science. I mean, if I would have changed that just a tiny bit and make it where the assumption going into it is that the written record is wrong and the carbon dating's right, my version would have come out. The Bayesian modeling is great if you have hard data going in all angles, but if you have, or if there's no real debate to be had and there's no real dog in the fight. But when it's something like this, where the whole fucking reason they took the carbon data from the Giza Plateau to begin with was because the Edgar Cayce Foundation and David Koch believed that the dates were wrong, that the written records were wrong. So when they're just wrong, even by just a few hundred years, and archaeology is like, yeah, you know what we're going to do right there? We're going to massage that until it's gone, instead of like try to reconcile this with, that's not science. Okay. This is creationist kind of shit. I mean, this is the same. We're not going to take any carbon dates that don't align with the 6,000 year old earth. And now all of a sudden, ta-da, all my stuff says the earth 6,000 years old. This is stupid. Yeah. This is just stupid.
Yeah. And they would argue that conclusion is set in stone, that it's hard, but it's once you're adding more and more layers of non innate conclusions, you're adding layers onto it. The second you start adding in algorithms and calculations, and it starts to become less precise, and trying to take that less precise possible range and place it into a precise year is arbitrary to a certain extent. And whether or not it's true or not, it doesn't mean that we have the information to prove it, and we just don't. But if somebody wants to argue for a certain position based on an exact date, and they can create a solid enough argument for it that people aren't going to look into, then that can become essentially fact in the minds of a lot of people.
That's exactly it. And that's something that, in all honesty, they should be hedging against. I mean, again, I always bring up that the Constitution of the Society for American Archaeology, and one of the original bylaws, like its very first law, probably even got it on my desktop right now because I was throwing it at somebody here just a few days ago. But it is the very first one of those laws, maybe not. But the very first one of their bylaws was straight up talking about how to work with amateurs and all that. But then it also says that to inform the public of the limits of archaeology. It's like, and they've gone well past that at this point. Like if you, when they conflate their opinion on something with facts, and a lot of times, like with Darren Kuyu, for example, like I've had this discussion with numerous people on the internet to the point where I don't even barely talk about it anymore, because they'll all get to the same point. We know the oldest layers of Darren Kuyu are the highest. There's no trash in those layers that have been found. The only stuff we found is way lower. So it's clearly newer. So they date it to the Byzantinian Christian era based on Byzantinian Christian artifacts. And it's like, well, okay, but you know that it was built before that, right? I mean, clearly it was built before that. Well, yeah, but we have no hard data to say that, so we can't go with that. Well, that's fine. But then you know that what your position is fucking wrong, right? So don't call it a goddamn science, dude. You can follow the scientific method all you want, but if you know at the end of the day your conclusions, if you know at the end of the day your fucking conclusion is wrong, you're telling me that you're pissing up a rope and then you're trying to get me to sign off on it, dude. That's,
or at
that's
least
why
you don't have enough information to prove their conclusion. It's
yeah.
And but they won't stick with what they know for sure. So if you find information like the law of stratigraphy, you go lower down, things are older, and that's almost always true. And so you go down in these layers, but if you find Byzantine artifacts in that place, in a certain layer, if you can vary like the layer above that, if you can date the layer above that, you have a latest date that it could possibly be.
Yeah.
The fact that there are Byzantine artifacts in there gives you an earliest date for when those artifacts were created. So they must have been buried. That layer at least has also an earliest date. I think, what do they call it? Terminus antiquem and whatever, something else antiquem. But that gives you a very, very broad range. And this is what I was talking about earlier. You have that broad range. You know that for sure. But any argument that you try to make based on more information, that's based on just, you know, that at that point, a more specific date than that absolute range that you have is an argument. It can't be a fact. And trying to argue that it's a fact, to me, reduces their credibility. But to a lot of people, they're just going to believe it because at the end of the day, they want to.
Yeah. Well, no, what Darren Kuyu is, a unique circumstance because it's the tunnels in Turkey, like the underground city. Mm-hmm. So they find artifacts in one of these, it's like multiple layers, like 20 some odd layers or something like that. And each layer, like it's an anthill basically, but it's man-made. So the top layer is the first one dug, but they find artifacts way on down in one of these other holes. So you find no artifacts on the earliest layer because it's basically stratigraphy is reversed here because the top caves were dug first and the next level of caves and the next level of caves. So when you get to the 30th level of caves, it could have been centuries or thousands of years since the first ones were dug. So they know for a fact that if the Byzantinian Christians were kicking it down here, it's almost 100% certain that they didn't dig all these tunnels themselves. So somebody was probably there before. You have nothing on the first layer to date it by. So we can just make assumptions. And the first couple of layers are even dug way differently. But because they can only make assumptions, it's dated to the Byzantinian Christian era. But the assumptions are clearly wrong because, again, it's so many layers down. So, yeah, just to clarify, that's a unique circumstance. But, like, what I usually end up using as an argument with that is, say, like, if you had, like, the what should we call it, the Mount Rushmore. If somebody came to Mount Rushmore and they came there 1,000 years from now, they would date it wrong by 100 years because of the trash that's there, right? Now, what the same thing with the Colosseum. If you assume the Roman Colosseum was made out of concrete or was made out of stone that was undateable, if you go 10,000 years in the future, they would think that it was made in the 20th century based on the trash that's there. So,
right.
This is like, this is where they know, and they know this stuff. It's not like I'm the first guy to come up with this shit and tell them this. They fucking talk about this when their first year of class. The problem is they just ignore it. Just like a lot of religious people ignore the problems in their theology. They're just like, and that's where it's like calling it a science is actually offensive to me because I fucking like science. So,
yeah, it's not a science broadly, but it shouldn't matter whether it's a science or not. The strength of the argument is still the point. I mean,
I can't argue with that at all.
Yeah. It's back when the social and political climate was different. Phrenology was a science, and phrenology, we spoke about it before. That is the science at the time. Contemporarily, it was a science which should bring up red flags for anyone that calls themselves a scientist because they were able to do it and people accepted it. That you could tell an individual's personality based on the shape of their skull. Craniometry, which is an actual science, is just measuring a skull. Yep. If you draw conclusions from that skull measurement that a certain group of people is inferior, that's pseudoscience. But the actual studies of the shape of their head, that's just the shape of someone's head.
Yep.
There's nothing racist about the measurements of someone's head. There's exactly nothing pseudoscientific about it. But once you start drawing conclusions from those numbers, that's where it's not science. in any situation, and yeah. including that situation.
No, I completely agree with you. It's funny that the ideas of phrenology drove like two really horrible things, and we remember one of them. At least I babble about one of them fairly regularly. Is about
Think phrenology is not the race. It might include some of that, but I think phrenology is mostly the personalities of individuals. I don't think that gets okay.
Yeah, society will talk about it being overtly racist, and in a lot of ways it was, because you know Black people tended to be less educated at the time, as well as everybody who wasn't white in the Americas. So it's like they were testing it on people that weren't as educated, and so they would come up with their own theories. But that's what the atrocities, in my opinion, occurred when the elongated skulls in the Pacific Northwest, there were thousands of those up here, and these dudes are the phrenology encouraged a looting of those skulls to the degree where the majority of them are still gone. And the other one was the idea that phrenology, the idea that each skull was unique, that's where your personality traits came from, gave rise to the idea that it was like an early form of fingerprinting. They would measure people's skulls when they were arrested, and then they would measure them again if this was a case. And there's more than one guy that went to prison because his skull was measured, and they determined that he was somebody else. And yeah, I'm not joking. I mean, it's been a hot minute since I've seen these things, and seemed like that was on one of those Ripley Believe It or Not kind of bullshit when I was younger.
Yeah, that's crazy. And grave robbing of Native American human artifacts in general was a big problem. That's why we had NAGPRA in the 90s, which was a good law initially.
Yeah, and it's just gotten a little out of control. Yeah. Dogpaw says, talk about Max Headroom, so I do have to weigh in. Yeah, Max Headroom's fucking awesome. It's one of the best TV shows you'll ever see. It's got so many... The one episode, for example, there's a terrorist organization that causes destruction, but they just do it for camera, for clicks, basically. The show's so metaphorical that the world is ran by television networks. Like, this was made in the late 80s, right? The world is ran by TV networks. The people that run around that are reporters, their cameras look like freaking half M16s. They reload film canisters, M16 clips. I mean, it's like it's all about like inner workings and clicks and AI and shit. It's a weird ahead of its time show in a lot of ways, for sure. Yes, very prophetic, for sure. It was a lot of fun. I liked it. No, it wasn't Disney, thank God. Fun fact, it was actually makeup. And it won like the best computer graphics in like 1988 or something. It was just makeup. still good.
That's awesome.
Anyway, back to the cool stuff.
Gosh, that actually, I do have something to say on that.
Yeah,
anthropology related. You know, you look at movies from the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, and for certain aspects earlier, but the lack of technology. And this is true in any situation, broadly for cultures. A lack of a technology drives innovation. So when they didn't have CGI, you have these incredible, like, you used to have these historical drama movies where they have hundreds, thousands of actors on these fields with, you know, period-specific clothes and weaponry and all this stuff. And you have these beautiful hand animated characters in for animation for decades, almost a century. And then you have something like Lord of the Rings, where they start to do special effects. They start to do special effects, but they still have the practical effects. And over time, because there isn't this incentive to innovate in that way, and this incentive to produce the way that they did, that skill is lost over a few generations once people stop doing it, when they have the new technology. And unfortunately, we lose a lot of quality stuff as a result, a lot of quality media. Now it all sucks. Kind of.
Yeah, we've lost a lot of the practical effects were so awesome. No, I can see why, like, I agree with what you say there about the Lord of the Rings part, especially. It's like the combination of both works great. But
or Pirates of the Caribbean, another early one from that same era where it was switching over.
But yeah, it's gotten so bad that, I mean, it's gotten to where a lot of things look really, really cheap and end up looking like I could make it down in my basement with the fucking green screen behind me. And
yeah,
you know, it wouldn't take, you know, too terrible. I mean, good God, it is frustrating too. It's like filmmaking is, you know, American filmmaking used to be kind of like considered kind of a high art, and mm-hmm. It really is like schlock now. And even people that are like hardcore film critics, and they're like they don't side on any of the political stuff. They love their franchises and everything else. They never got mad at Star Wars or any of these other franchises that pissed a lot of people off. And even them will tell you quickly that it's like the writing sucks nowadays. There's no new ideas. Everything it's video games are a lot in the same boat. It's like in the 80s and 90s,
well, mainstream AAA titles.
That's what I was just going to say. In the 80s and 90s, thankfully, you could go like, I'll grab right here my VHS collection. Well, I don't think Kathy Smith's 20-minute kickboxing really counts, but like Hamburger the Motion Picture, this is a B movie. It's got Dick Butkus in it. It's making fun of the McDonald's college. And from the 80s, it's fucking hilarious. And it is something that went pretty much straight to VHS. I mean, it probably had it 45 minutes in the theater, but that was the same as what Steam offers with the indie scene nowadays. It's like, yeah, you're going to have the graphics are going to look worse. The sound isn't going to be as good. There might be a little blurb and a glitch here and there, but at the end of the day, it's probably going to be a more enjoyable product because you're fucking sick and tired of the same thing over and over again. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I see Diego in the chat. What's up, buddy? Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate, but there are lots of great indie games. Most of them, I don't have time to play, but they are. Oh, yeah. And that's another, if you were an indie developer, you couldn't really make, well, in the early days of PC gaming, like the 90s PC gaming, there were a lot of independent. I mean, that's the history of PC and console games is entirely different because the console games were dominated by large players like Nintendo and Sega and then Sony and Microsoft. But what the hell is that?
Oh, that's just cruel.
Yeah, I've never seen these.
Oh, yeah, these are old school.
Gosh, I'm sure that they used to play on sci-fi back when I watched TV in high school. but, oh, man, I forgot what I was saying.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. My fault. Video games. There wasn't, when there is a platform and there's an ability for people to develop games on their own without starting a large company to do it, then an industry will be created. This is true in anything. It can even be true just based on the cultural laws of a place. Like our craft beer industry in America was started in the 1980s based on laws changing. And laws prior to that change in the 1980s prevented people from doing small batch brewing. You would have to have a lot of startup to be able to brew beer at all and sell it. But then they had the change in the laws and you were able to do it with a lot lower startup capital, like by several orders of magnitude. And it created an industry that was basically defined at least the 2010s, 30 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. There's we got people in the chat talking about leaving Call of Duty to the indie stuff. And it's like I get on the one hand that games are so complicated now that it makes sense that everybody's going to be using the same five engines and whatnot. I get that. But the ideas and stuff end up being like I remember it wasn't that long ago, 20 years ago, even like in the early, early days, games were all over the fucking place. Mm-hmm. But, as they started to like hone in and stuff, and you got, you know, your tank games and your airplane games and your mech games and your role-playing games, and your platformers, they still would come out with these new kinds of genres and stuff. Like Katamari is a great example. If you've never seen that one, where you'd roll the fucking, you just roll up a ball and go around the world picking bullshit up and the ball gets bigger. Yeah, such a goofy fucking game. But that's the kind of stuff that studios are afraid to take risks on anymore. And the same with film. It's like there's nothing.
Large studios, yeah.
There's no, I see nothing come out of films that in the film studios of the big ones that is innovative at all. It's just like recycling.
Moneyball did that.
I guess it did.
So it's in almost every industry. It's the business environment in these large corporations, because yes, they're video game makers, but at the end of the day, they're not primarily video game makers. They are companies that work through a certain corporate structure that's similar to a dog food company more than it is to an independent video game studio. I don't know if you're still there yet.
You are. Oh yeah. Did it disappear?
No. You were frozen for a minute.
Sorry.
The snack industry too. If you remember, in the 90s into the 2000s, these snack companies were companies that were trying to innovate snacks, and you had all these crazy 3D Doritos and different new candies coming out every week. We don't have a lot of that anymore from these large companies, any type of large company, because they're operating on this model of maximizing profits, and they're all full of the same consultants from the same big three companies that are coming in and telling them what to do. So they all do the same thing, whether their product is chocolate or video games or anything or movies or anything else. But that with the smaller indie developers, you have the chance for video games like Minecraft that a large company would never have been able to produce, but it's the most popular video game of all time. Not able to produce, but they never would have. They were able to do it, but it never would have practically been invented. As well as, you know, the type of beers that craft beers would have made. And I hate IPAs, so I actually don't care, but a lot of people enjoy them.
Yep.
And those are just not possible from smaller industries. And when we create the technology and the social and economic environment, when we live in a culture that allows that incentivizes that, then we're able to have different and possibly better things through the innovation that's incentivized.
Yeah.
In that process.
No, you're right on. A lot of it is, like 757 was saying, a lot of it just comes down to the private firms. Really, it's when a company that stays private and doesn't become a publicly traded company, generally speaking, these guys tend to do all right. Like Chick-fil-A, as long as they can muster up enough funding on their own. Like Chick-fil-A,
as long as they're not sold to private equity, then it's worse.
Well, then exactly. Like, I don't know if you ever went to Dave's Hot Chicken.
I have.
Okay. Yeah. Have you gone there before and after they got sold?
I don't know when they were sold. There's one that opened up a couple of years ago. It was good, but it was stupid expensive.
Yeah. Well, now they're smaller and they're not as good. And
it happened to Panera Bread.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of it's kind of a model.
Everything.
It's a model for. If you're a customer that loves Panera Bread, it really sucks. But if you're the person that opened up Panera Bread, it's probably what you were hoping would happen to begin with. Me and five of my friends open up this restaurant. We get it going, and then as soon as somebody comes and offers me a few million dollars, it's fucking theirs.
I think it was more than a few million, but
yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, that's just basically how that shit goes. Sadly.
And that is also an incentive structure created by the laws that we have. I private equity I could talk about forever, but the private equity's effect on our everyday lives has been extraordinarily negative, and it has to do with the incentive structure that they operate on. They cannibalize companies. Their incentive structure is often inherently, almost always, it's antithetical. It's opposite the incentive structure of the companies that they purchase. And that creates a very, very obvious conflict of interest when they are owning the companies. So they own the companies, they control the companies, and they own the private equity firm. And they control the private equity firm to create benefit, or they destroy the company that they own to sometimes create short-term profit for the company, but ultimately a lot of the times what it ends up happening is they sell the assets to the private equity firm, including the land that they have, the assets, the locations, and that creates bonuses for the employees of the private equity firm. And what happens long-term, the incentives are not in line with the individuals in the private equity firm benefiting from long-term success of the company. It's based on short-term success of the company. So they will sacrifice, just obviously they will sacrifice the long-term success of the company that they are not incentivized to produce for the short-term success of the company, which they are incentivized to produce. Yeah. That.
Turned into the debanking channel, somebody said. That's fucking about me.
Well, but the, like, anthropology, it's not archaeology, right? But it is anthropology. Yeah. We have these organizations, these political, these social organizations that are allowed to exist in our country and our culture, and they have wide effects on our lives. I mean, the worst one for me is the Hudson Bay Company, right? And the Hudson Bay Company was the premier retailer in Canada. And it is the same Hudson Bay Company from the explorers, from that explored the Hudson Bay 377 years before it went defunct, I think. And they were destroyed by private equity just a couple of years ago. They're gone. 377 years. Like the pride of Canada in that particular industry, and it's just gone. It's very sad, and it's a loss of a piece of our culture in North America that's very significant. Toys R Us, gone. Panera Bread, healthy, relatively cheap option for people who have to get something quick. It was healthy, and it was relatively cheap, and it was awesome. And private equity bought it and ruined it. People don't have that option anymore. They've lost the pride of Hudson Bay. I can't live through nostalgia going to a Toys R Us to buy my niece or future kids a gift because private equity destroyed Toys R Us.
Well, Hastings was, I don't know if you have Hastings where you live. Hastings was a video rental chain that outlived Blockbuster by a good decade. They were still around 10 years ago. They just closed. It was like 8 years ago or so. And, they had rode high by staying like relevant by using a lot of collectibles, a lot of video game merchandise and stuff, where it's kind of like going into one of those comic book stores or whatever in a mall. They did really good, and then they started trying to do the eBay thing. They started buying. I remember the day that I was certain that Hastings was going to go under was when they said they were buying any record, no matter what. And I asked them, I'm like, even if it's just junk, and they said, like, well, the minimum price will be like a tenth of a cent, but yeah, we'll take anything. And then dudes were coming in that had been collecting vinyl, been buying and selling vinyl for 50 years, and they're coming in with fucking shopping carts full of junk that's been sitting in their basement forever. And now Hastings is buying, even if they're paying $2 for the shopping cart, they're paying somebody $20 to check it in. And nobody's ever going to buy it. Now they got a store there. Writing on the wall immediately. And that's some corporate dickhead that was like, you know, we could make a lot of money doing eBay. It's like, yeah, minimum wage employees plus eBay do not work. And corporate mandates plus eBay. Oh, yes, we'll just buy things based on the price charting or whatever. I mean, I've made so much money off of companies that use those kinds of things.
That's crazy. That I could have told you that was wrong immediately.
Well, yeah, and they probably – then they had all the issues, too, with, like, you've got people that don't know anything about the shit. There's a huge difference in price between a 50-year-old video game that has its box and manual and one that doesn't. Like, there's a huge difference in price. Contra for the original Nintendo box is probably $100, and just a cartridge is just like $20. So I was all the time getting boxed games from them there because they would buy them and then put them on the floor as though they weren't boxed. So it'd be like $5 for a jank game, but it'd be in its box. So it was worth 30 or 40. I was doing this fuck. Yeah. Anyway, this is what happens when you have like the hands off the fucking wheel, right? Like their hands on the wheel don't have their eyes on the road, I guess is the best way of putting it.
Yeah. I think there's probably executives who looked at a spreadsheet of raw numbers, and those raw numbers were not
indicative of reality.
well, they were indicative of some reality, but not the important one for what they were trying to do, because they saw the numbers of records that being sold and the sales, and they treated records like they were fungible objects. And that's just not true. Fungible meaning that they are that one, like $2. If I hold $2 bills, those are fungible. One and the other, as long as they're like not rare or whatever, those their value is the same. Whereas with records, they're not fungible, because if you have a Marlon Brando record original from the 70s, that's going to be worth a lot more than a record for some Joe Schmo that no one heard of that's all destroyed. They're not fungible with each other. One is worth way more than the other. Like Pokemon cards are big right now. A first generation Charizard that's in mint condition, which basically doesn't exist. But if it did, that Charizard and a random energy card from the most recent set, those are not fungible, even though they both would show up if you were looking at the numbers as an executive in a modern company does as two Pokemon cards, but they're not the same thing.
That stuff's crazy. Who's from Spokane? I'm from Spokane. What was the one that, oh yeah, they're all saying fuck Flint Dibble, which is hilarious. Did you see he's doing a cruise? Did you see that? He's going to be like speaking on a cruise ship. And I had more than one follower tell me that I should.
Dan, we can do the funniest thing ever.
We can do the funniest thing ever. He's stuck with us, right?
Oh my God. Dan, you and me, first class suite, buddy, sleeping next to each other in those single beds. Get drunk as fuck. Live stream that shit. What is it? How much is the internet plan for that ship? Let's go. Look it up. Here, share my screen.
I'm sure he's got our names on the fucking can't come to the party list.
You think he's smart enough to figure that out? You think he's smart enough to think that we would do that?
He might not have. But it was funny to me that he's doing the public facing archaeology thing, which I mean, there's two kinds of scientists that do the public facing thing. The one kind is very talented, as a Carl Sagan. They are, hello guys, I'm going to take this stuff and make it palatable. And then the other guy is a failed scientist because they can't, they're not doing any good in their real field. So,
like maybe an archaeologist that hasn't produced an archaeology paper since 2021. Flint Dibble.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was too busy teaching for Dartmouth University.
Wait. He didn't do that, did he?
He taught by Zoom for Dartmouth. And that was
2022. Sorry. Okay. He taught Zoom for Dartmouth.
Yeah, and that during the time like when they were people were using indigenous bones as teaching aids. And I got in big trouble for being not just in violation of NAGPRA, but like really being in violation of NAGPRA, like
at Dartmouth.
Yeah. And so I made a big stink about this and I didn't know that Flint had taught by Zoom and Flint freaked out because I was like, maybe Flint was one of the ones. And I use a video of him holding the fucking leg bone going, you know, you be careful or holding the dick bone, be careful of the finger.
Yeah. I was going to say it's probably a dick bone,
but you know, he's all that's gotten twisted into me lying about it. And it was a mistake. And even then I eventually like pointed out that I made a mistake, but the fact of the matter is it's fucking hilarious. Exactly. It's not like he calls people racist or anything. That's just it. I tried so hard. I got along well with Flint. I was very respectful to him. He's deleted all of the comments. So the only thing you can see is that he's deleted comments, but we got along really well until he decided that he was going to double down the racism thing. When I made the video pointing out that all that was bullshit, that their whole reasoning behind that's bullshit, he got angry and eventually just said that it didn't even matter, that because we all know that the two are related to each other anyway. And
of course.
Well, I mean, at that point, it's like you're not being scientific. And so then I started getting mad, but then when he did the debate with Graham and I saw him not owning the racist thing, that was when I'm like, all right, dude, I'm not, gloves off. And since then he's been like angry, scared, scorched earth. That's why I figure he's probably already did that with the cruise. Like we were going to be on Pierce Morgan together again. And he demanded that I apologize for saying shit about him having mail order bride. And I'm like, dude, I'll apologize to you the second you apologize to me and Graham and the rest of us for implying that we're racist.
Yeah, and he's got a couple other things to apologize for as well. And I've been clear for the last year plus that everything will be forgiven if you just apologize and stop being a dick. And I will apologize for some of the stuff I've said.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. But until you're willing to do that, no. Well, like, I don't, this isn't enjoyable for me. I don't know if it is for you. Sometimes it is, but I don't like it. I would rather I we'd all be better off if we shared the information and we're respectful to each other, and we could benefit if people were willing to treat others with a basic amount of respect, even if you don't like the ideas that they're saying. We would all benefit from the contributions that others can make, including the mainstream people benefiting from the views of some of the alternative people who have a different way of viewing things. And those alternative people might miss certain things because they don't have that mainstream background. That happens. But at the same time, the mainstream people also have blind spots that can be served by the alternative people and the way that those alternative people think and look at a situation differently. And like, these are the first people who would usually be saying diversity is their strength. Okay, well, let's get the intellectual diversity in here. It can be our strength. It should be. But instead, yeah, it's just treated as a threat.
No, well, that's just it. It's one of the funniest things. I have, like, I was talking about how I've been arguing with these boneheads on Twitter about this stuff. And it's like, I've been stretching this one out with that Veritas guy because I've already got him already got him with that stupid ass Hadrian's Wall crap. But the next thing that I'm gonna hit him on, it's gonna be fucking ugly, and I haven't even done it yet because I've been along the internet enough to know how to argue with dickheads like this. So I'm just gonna string him along to where it's basically a nice neat bow when it's all said and done. He's already fucked with Hadrian's Wall. But the next one is the whole he's crying about how white supremacists make this argument and white supremacists make this argument and white supremacists make that argument. He's fair. Now I'm just going to start going in and start bringing him some of those fucking We Was Kings bullshit. Be like, all right, how about this guy? Why do I never see you guys complaining about this dude? Is he allowed to do that? How about these Native Americans that believe that they came from the caves over there? Why aren't you complaining about them? Why is it that the only time you complain about some, the only time you like complain Kobe. About somebody having pseudoscientific ideas is it's when you can label them white. The only political thing is you label them white supremacy. And I'm not like, I get like the whole, like, I don't want to get into politics too much, but I think it's fucking hilarious that it's like they, certain aspects of it are allowed and certain are not. And it's like, dude, that's one thing to be like culturally, I don't think we should blah, blah, blah. But it's another thing altogether when you're talking science, right? If this is, you got a problem with this guy's pseudoscientific shit because it's promoting racism. What in the actual fuck is this guy's pseudoscientific shit promoting racism allowed for? Well, you know, Dan will take twice as long. Why? At my age, dude, it takes me about 38 seconds, dude. I mean, most chicks, I drive them to their house. And by the time we get there, I'm like, thank you. All I had to do was like think about what's fixing to happen, drop them off, tell them to have a nice day.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Tire ECS 69, they game and you're missing it. Well, I do agree they game, but I don't think we're missing it as much as you just can't like, doesn't matter what I see. It is like, there's the old saying that those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. And then there's the extension of that those that do know history are doomed to stand by and watch others repeat it. Yeah. That's basically what it is, dude. I just because I see a fucking sleight of hand game doesn't mean that everybody else does, nor that I can portray that to everyone else. Mm-hmm. Name of kitty, please.
The kitty's name is Magdalene Teresa, named after Mary Magdalene and Maria Theresa of Austria, 17th century empress. But I mostly just call her Maggie.
Oh, cute. Yeah.
She's 3 months old. I found her at 2 weeks, eyes barely open, under my friend's patio. And now she's my little baby. I fed her with a bottle.
Aww.
Oh, and
Aww. She's
going to fuck up my necklace. Don't do that.
Yeah, no, yes, Boris Plato did describe, did say that there was a vast continent across the sea. Yeah, there was, Plato described, like, Plato's an interesting one. A lot of those descriptions I like to get into. It's one of the things that's funny is that you see them, so many of the debunkers try to use Plato is like this catch-all to debunk all the entire idea of Atlantis. And I mean, clearly by reading other accounts from the time, you can see that this idea was not just in Plato's mind, but you know, even if the fact that he was using this lost civilization as an argument to make his position, to me, says that his contemporaries believed in a lost civilization. So, no, hey, you know what, Woody? If you're a chick that's well-stacked, we can have this discussion. But if you're just some dude telling me that I need to trim my beard, I don't know what to tell you, man. I'm not too interested. Sorry. No offense, but feet or hair. That's right. Feet or hair beard. Nads. You know those Manscaped commercials? They don't sponsor me.
They should sponsor me. No, I don't use the Manscaped one. It's I forget what brand I use, but it's
an older
brand. It's really good. Yeah,
older brand, Gillette.
Like a legacy brand. I forget which one it is, but downstairs. I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about in the comments, but I'm just gonna ignore it.
I thought a beard was somebody that married a lesbian, so they look like they were straight.
Yeah, well, I don't think it necessarily has to be a lesbian, but I think it usually probably is. Good arrangement for a gay and a lesbian. Except that if you were in a time when you can outwardly be gay or lesbian, but gays and lesbians, in my experience, don't really like vibe with each other.
I was gonna say they don't like each other. That's the only problem is they have to live in the same house together.
yeah, exactly.
Like the only time I ever see them getting along is when they're both carrying signs, and even then they're kind of apart from each other.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, you know, I think gay men in general, not all of them obviously, but are generally associated with being feminine, and lesbians are not. And maybe the difference would make them meet in the middle, but it doesn't seem to do that in practicality.
Yeah, no, it's because you've got men and women that aren't sexually attracted to each other, and you know, biologically there's the drive to reproduce, so there may well be a degree of dislike that is not it's not found in straight people there. You know, who knows for sure, but it is definitely funny that I don't think I've ever seen too many gay and lesbians that got along well. Mm-hmm. I worked with a pair of lesbians, and there was a gay dude that worked there, and they didn't like fight, but they didn't get along.
No.
The Archeos hawk their books in Jimmy's feed. You're fucking right. They do, Rue. They absolutely use Jimmy's feed as a way to be like, you should check out my stuff. I watched this one dude go around, and in response to that language thing, he went around and spammed like three of his friends' things, like four books, like 20 different places. The same fucking thing.
That's against the terms of service. And even if it's not, if somebody tries to advertise their stuff, unless they're friends with me if it's someone I know and it's relevant enough, I'll let it stay. But if it's someone I don't know, and even if it is relevant, I'm usually going to block them from my field or from my account, because I'm not going to let somebody just advertise their video or their book or whatever in my comment section. I don't understand why people don't inherently realize that that's disrespectful.
Yeah,
I guess I think you don't have respect for the person.
I think that's Tony Hinchcliffe in the comment section asking me to describe a gay Klingon. That sounds like the kind of thing Tony Hinchcliffe would. could you describe a gay Klingon for me? How do you attack a Romulan? And what would happen if it was in a holodeck? And yeah, sorry.
Unbelievable.
Yes. Fuck. He was so funny when I met him. He's like, you're the archaeologist, right? And I'm like, well, I'm more of a pseudo archaeologist. He's like, you talk about big rocks, right? Fucking archaeologist, as far as I'm concerned. Okay. I'll make sure and let all the guys on Twitter know. Hey, archaeologist, guess what?
I'd love to meet him.
Oh, he was fun. And he's busy, obviously. I mean, it was during the show, so he's before.
Did they let you in the green room?
Oh, yeah. That was weird, too, because, like, the band, I'm walking by, and the band, most of them didn't, like, half of them didn't know who I was, but a couple of them did, and the one guy's like, oh, he's got bigger following than all of us, except D-Madness, and I was just like, dude, I don't know. Symbol really? On your head. Yep, that's the symbol dude, the drummer said that. I don't remember his name, but the one who wears
the drummer, the drummer knew who you were, I bet.
Yeah, he knew who I was.
I'd like him a lot. Who was the other one that knew who you were?
I don't remember. I was walking through the staircase going up and down, and it was dark, and they were all like on the wall, and I was being led up and past them.
And the white guy knew who you were, though, right?
Matt Mueller. The drummer guy, he's like, I think he's mulatto. I don't know.
That guy's Hispanic. The drummer's Hispanic. Okay. But you said two guys knew who you were, so I think that the other guy would have been the white guy in the band, the guitarist.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, band's funny.
It was weird. They definitely I don't think the after party was really weird. There that place was a lot of fun. It was really nice. Like people were having a good time.
Yeah. At what do they call it? Mitzi's.
Yeah, Mitzi's, yep. But yeah, it was it's funny, to go back to what we were yabbering about here, like the Dave Farina guy, I'm gonna just kind of keep going after him on the other channel and just keeps I'm gonna just like the carbon dating thing. It's like he doesn't do good research in these things. He just kind of comes in and says whatever the fuck he thinks that should be said, right? Like whatever he thinks is accurate. He's easy to prove wrong. And
Oh, that guy. I just looked him up
yeah.
based on his name. Yeah, that guy
Yeah.
sucks, but it doesn't
Well,
matter.
it doesn't matter because he gets lots of views when he talks shit about people. But the thing is, it's going to be easy to prove it. It's already easy to prove him like doesn't know what he's talking about and stuff. And I kind of think that it's unfortunate, but this kind of thing needs to happen. If science is going to get better, if the community is going to get better, it needs to, like, instead of calling on guys like Dave Farina, they need to be calling him out. Instead, like guys like Flint are like, hey, Dave, give me a hand over here. But in reality, what should be happening is the scientists should be saying, this guy doesn't fucking represent us. This guy's an idiot.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are people saying that, but there are people that do not have large followings. Because once they do have large followings, there's an incentive for them to be on the side of someone like Dave, because he is in like he can benefit them. Just like for it applies to us as well. I'm even though I mostly do mainstream stuff, I'm in the network of the alternative field, so. There are probably situations, and this hasn't happened in any significant way so far, where somebody who's bigger than me, like you or Jimmy, or someone that's larger than me that I'm relatively close with, says something that I disagree with. But at the same time, I think that we have more of a culture in the alternative field of people being able to disagree with each other without it becoming a problem that affects relationships. Of course, depending on what it is, but that is a thing that people have to watch out for and be aware of, I think.
Oh yeah, oh it's absolutely part of it. It's a real dangerous part of it. And the thing is how you disagree with people has a lot to do with it. And that's where Dave is just off the rails. He just disagrees like an asshole. Now Knox asks, why should scientists care? Dave isn't a scientist. He has a liberal chemistry bachelor and teaching degree because he's a science communicator. They should care. They should care about him more than they do Graham Hancock. In my mind, because
Right.
he
Because he's
is.
actually representing their field.
Thank you.
He might not be a scientist, but he is the face of scientists to face of science to what, 4 million people?
Yeah.
And he is sending out pseudoscience. That's what he's doing because it's incorrect information a lot of the times.
And he has that air of like I'm representing team science, so I've got I'm he often has mainstream scientists on his channel with him. He is basically.
Which legitimizes him
Which is
from
absolutely.
the scientific community.
And that's all fine. And I mean, honestly, I don't have a problem with the like having scientists on and stuff. The issue is when you do lazy work and use it to rep there's it if I went out there and talked about Civil War history and got a bunch of bullshit wrong, I would have no shortage of historians crawling right up my ass telling me I was wrong on every little stupid thing. But Dave gets to a free pass because he's going after certain people, and because I still think Flint paid him money for his first video. I think that
Uh-oh. I
Flint
don't think
hired
so.
him. Oh, I
How do you know
honestly
that?
do. Oh,
But
I don't
it
know that.
benefits Dave already to have Flint on because he was high profile. It's essentially based on Graham Hancock's name that that was built, because
Yeah.
Flint
But why
Dibble's
would
name
why
was
did
built by
but
Joe
it
Rogan
wasn't
and
even
Graham
on
Hancock.
his David never talked about such things before. And
Right.
then
Okay.
when he does show up, he's got Flint in his video. It's some of the stuff comes straight from Flint's mouth. Some of it came straight from yeah, it to me it seems pretty obvious that like at the very least he was in communication with Flint
Oh,
before it
well,
happened.
he would have had to be to include stuff in that video. It's just who
Yeah.
knows who reached out
No,
first.
I don't know for that's why I mean I can't say it for sure, but I do it does seem to me like that's I wouldn't be surprised at all. But either way, the bottom line is that Flint is calling on him or however to being he's using him to make the argument. And his following being so vitriolic and so angry and stuff, it like I just didn't want to respond to him anymore because he's an asshole and he doesn't know anything. He's an idiot.
But yeah.
It ended up to the point where it's like, dude, no, man, this is like people thinking that he actually like that. This is just me walking away from the argument and stuff. It's like, no, this can't. No, fuck all that. Oh, thank you, Rebecca. Thank you very much.
I know her. What's up, Rebecca? How you doing? Yeah,
haven't seen her since Scottsdale, just a few months.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
Do I know of the cocaine and tobacco in the mummies in Egypt? Oh yeah, of course. Thank you. Yeah, that's a fun one. Like I was on
which are New World plants, by the way.
Yeah. When I was on Rogan, we were talking about New World plants. Yeah, when I was on Rogan, we were talking about it, and I realized that then we were doing the research in real time there, and realized that the cocaine was like in the hair of the mummies, like inside of the hair. It wasn't like because my initial reaction was, I mean, pretty obvious what happened there, right? I mean, the fucking 70s archaeologists sitting there fucking doing bumps off the mummy's fucking sarcophagus.
Smoking cigarettes, doing lines.
Probably movies. Fucking while awesome. They're at it, right? Yeah. Duh. Come on.
It was the 70s. It was probably clean, too. No baking powder or whatever.
Yeah. Less bad karma wrapped up into each bomb.
Yeah.
Well, there's another dead Mexican. It's like fucking terrible. But, yeah, have I seen the response of the cocaine lady that found to the ones that she said made an error? I don't follow what you're saying there. Sorry, I haven't seen the response to cocaine mummy stuff, but I mean, I've seen the discussion, but less baby laxative. Jesus Christ. A little scholar knows his zoot. But
yeah. I'm not supporting doing illicit drugs, and that's not me doing wink wink nudge, just I am actually not supporting that.
I on the other hand completely support Samuel from Illegitimate Scholar doing illicit drugs.
Yeah, not anymore. Not
I'm just anymore. Kidding. I didn't want to say that I support illicit drugs, but I wanted to make it sound like we're getting close.
Yeah. I will do illicit drugs on, well, no, I can't do that on live stream. I got banned. If Flint Dibble agrees to debate me on his BS that he said, but he won't do it.
Oh, hey, thanks, Frost. Yeah, sorry, guys. I've got a cold, so I'm blowing my nose every now and again off camera. But it's not even that bad. I might even just be a little bit of hay fever. It started yesterday when I went to my friend's house that lives about a half hour away. Sean, he's got this place up on the backside of Mount Spokane, and we were taking dabs. And after that, my nose started running, and it's been going ever since. I'm dying right now. He says, okay, yeah, buddy, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Maybe more baby laxative. Man, I can't afford the baby laxative. I just afford. Oh, dude, is that a flower pot you got there?
Yeah. Yeah, flower pot.
I can't de-dunk everything. I don't even know the Enuma Elish off the top of my head. I've got a lot of stuff that people want me to look into, but right now I'm almost done with the video on the language paper, and I think it'll be a pretty good one because it's the pop archaeology articles on it are really fucking bad.
Like, pop science articles are terrible. They're so bad all the time.
But yeah, this one and like there's a lot of archaeoastronomy tie-ins too. In addition to that, like I say, I'm doing a lot of the debunkings and stuff again. I'm gonna start looking. Miano made a video about me like 9 months ago or so. I should probably get around to taking on that. And
was that the part one? Was I in that one too that you're talking about?
I'm not sure. He's made a few about me. I'm not sure. I know that like I want to. I separated my channel basically. I'm gonna do all the argumentative like. When I make videos talking shit and response videos and stuff, I'm going to leave them on my second channel so that people blowing nose off camera equals doing lines off cocaine mummy. No, I don't have a cocaine mummy, and I'm way too old for that stuff, man. If I started doing that crap, I'd probably die. I take blood pressure medication. Oh, what are the nubs for? I've got a video on that already, actually. I think they were used for aligning the jigs for carving basically.
But I have no idea about those nubs.
Yeah, Yeah, there, I've got it. My believe it's still my most popular video, Freakish Preacher. If you check out my videos when we're done here, like if you just go to my videos and click the most popular, it should be the top one. It's like True Purpose of the Megalith Snow Nubs. But yeah, I know a lot of people here don't like to see argumentative stuff, and I know a lot of people do, and I don't want to, it's not good for the algorithm to be making two different kinds of content and people only click on half. So yeah. I put all the stuff over on the, I'm never wrong about anything, Freakish Preacher. You might think that I am, but I think you forgot to look and see whose name the channel it is you're on. Over in this country, Dan is right. Even when he's wrong, he's right. That is a racist argument. No, that's not a racist argument. The only thing that's racist is if you ain't Dan, you ain't right. But
that is racist. That's racist. That's racist. And I'm a professor of racism, so my opinion is
professor of racism. God damn it! Yeah.
And that makes me the top racist. I am the number one racist.
Yes, the mummies did actually used to be eaten. They for all kinds of goofy ass reasons.
Grind them up. Yeah, it's crazy, yep. Gnarly stuff. I don't even like seeing dead bodies in museums.
Yeah.
No, I don't know why it's illegal for us to display or have Native American skeletons. Well, it should be, to be clear, but that should apply to people, I think, in general. I don't think we need to keep that just on the Native Americans, even though in America, the Native Americans, they made that specific law because it was a particular problem affecting Native American graves. Yeah. But I feel like we should just make it, why? You know, except in specific circumstances where someone donated their body to science or whatever, and they're showing off, you know, in a science museum or whatever. I'm not going to go to that museum, but that can exist with, you know.
Well, I think a lot of it, honestly, like the display, there's a night and day difference in my mind between being used for academic research and displaying for public interest. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely. Like, to me, that's a huge difference. So I think that should be part of it. But I also do think, like, I mean, I think a lot of different scenarios, stuff's different. Like the Native Americans, as much as I like, there's a lot of different stuff here. I was just talking to my buddy Sean yesterday. It's like, if you're a tribal member and you live close to your old ways, dude, you live in an occupied country, and those cocksuckers, they're not going to raid your graves no more. They're not going to, not one fucking arrowhead kiss my ass, not one bead, not one blade of grass. You had enough. I get that perspective. Totally get that perspective. I don't agree with it because I'm not an Indian, but totally understand where they're coming from. And that right there, a lot of people will call that virtue signaling. I get that. And every time I talk about this kind of stuff, I end up with sub virtue signaling. It's not fucking virtue signaling. It's, if you ever sit down and play chess, you have to read your opponent's perspective and what they're going to do 5-10 moves ahead of time. If you aren't realistic about this, you're going to fucking lose. And if you extrapolate that into life in general, if you don't look at it from somebody else's perspective, from a realistic place, from their perspective, it's not just your version of how they are. It's not, these people are, nobody thinks they're evil. Very few people. There's a few serial killers out there and really evil people that think that. Most people don't think what they're doing is bad. They think it's good or the lesser of two evils or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eating plant kills you. Eat meat. Well, how about beet meat?
I don't know if eating plants kills you, but yeah.
I think you've given me the food that my food eats, as Ron says.
Yeah. 100%.
But yeah, you've been, I've seen you arguing on Twitter a little bit off and on, but I haven't seen you making videos for a hot minute, but yeah.
I'm coming back. I am coming back. I'm in the process of coming back. I have a few, I have some podcast episodes that are basically ready. I have two and I need to book some new people. I should probably have you on at some point if you're free.
Yeah.
And
I'm not free. It's like $80, but yeah.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. I'll
Venmo. Yeah, just kidding.
If I give you 120, will you come in and like, will you put on something for me? I'll send it to you. You agree to it before I tell you what I'm sending.
You had me scared as fuck there for a second. If I give you 120, will you come in? Dot dot dot.
No,
God, no. God damn it.
No, I was just gonna put you in this cute maid outfit I wore on my second podcast. No.
Blacks
I got
invented
some.
racism against Neanderthals. Okay, there we go. Now we're getting spicy.
Hell
Oh,
yeah.
sorry.
I got some stuff in the works on Margaret Mead and her CIA husband, ex-husband, and her BS in American Samoa that's still being told. It's the 100-year lie in anthropology. I got some stuff on Göbekli Tepe and the management documents surrounding it, how they haven't been updated in about 9 years. They're per Turkish law, out of date by 5 years, 2017 to 2021, 5 years. They're out of date by over 5 years. They would have never been up to date with the requirements from UNESCO, and they are out of date per Turkish law for 5 years. Place is being mismanaged. That's obvious. And I'm going to do a video on that. And then I think I have one more that'll be in the works after those two. But yes, I'm back. Consider me back and hold me accountable for being
Oh,
back if you
dude, I'm
care
not
about what
gonna.
I'm
Yeah,
producing.
man, I fuck, dude. I get it. Life is life, man. It's not easy to like this being the only thing that I do as far as work goes. I still got family and stuff that keeps me hopping, right? And so I can only imagine. But yeah, dude, yeah, you're one of the ones that it's. Let's put it this way. There's a lot of people that talk crap about the a debunker side of things, and I don't have a problem with that, but it's like a lot of the ideas that are like you're part of the mainstream establishment, you're lying for big archaeology, all that kind of stuff. There's no sense putting that content out in the world. It's just this more Professor Dave kind of pointing, laughing, vapid. You're gonna fight with these guys where they want to argue science. Meet them on the art on the scientific space, and then kick them in the dick, because that's where these guys, in all honesty, that's where a lot of these guys need to be. Like I said about Professor Dave, there's a lot of his videos that I agree with. What he, like I don't just agree with going after flat earthers. I agree that some of the stuff that they say is so clearly. There's no way they don't know they're full of shit. There is no way they don't know they're full of shit. And so go ahead and punch them in the nose. I'm okay on that. But again, it's even with like when they start arguing evolution and stuff, I get where it's like there's no real debate there. It's a circus at that point though. It's still vapid content, right? But it's fish in a barrel. The minute you try to fucking conflate us with this fish in a barrel flat earther shit, buddy, you're gonna fucking regret it. And that's one of the reasons I like having you on my side there is because you're not just gonna point at them and say they're stupid or lazily Google the title of a paper and call it good.
Yeah, and that's the niche that I fill, which is being it's not like I've been public about my view on Graham Hancock's hypothesis. I've never said that I think he's right. I haven't said that I think he's wrong. It's just I've said that I disagree with the mainstream people that they have disproven him. If for those that believe that, which I think a lot of them do, they have not effectively disproven Graham Hancock's hypothesis. But at the same time, I don't think it's proven. And having somebody who's willing to use the mainstream side and respects the field, and I sometimes go outside of the field of anthropology and other social studies and social science fields, but I get along more with the alternative people because of the way that they think more, even though me personally, I like to use the academic sources and their methodologies in a lot of ways.
No, yeah, I love archaeology. I get people that like I had to explain that one to JT because he was like, "Why do you always talk shit about archaeology if you love it?" And it's like, "Well,
I gotta unblock JT."
yeah, I love archaeology not because I put it like this: just I love video games. It doesn't mean I think they're real life. It's like it
Right.
does just because I love archaeology doesn't mean I think it's a science. It fucking
I don't know
I love
why
my
they
fleshlight,
do.
doesn't mean I want to marry
Jeez.
it.
Okay. I again, we already talked about this, but I don't understand why they are so adamant about archaeology being a science. I don't know why it matters, whether it's a science or not. It doesn't affect I mean, except tacitly and in the minds of people,
it affects a lot. Yeah, it affects funding. It would affect funding, and it would affect the way that they're publicly perceived. It affects I honestly think that's the biggest reason that they do, because like I've yammered about this a bunch, but archaeology began as a field for antiquarians to catalog their goods. Okay. It was for collectors, like video game collectors, saying, did this one get made in Mexico, or was this one made in France, or was this one made in Hong Kong? Let's look and see. Well, this one's got those three dots on the upper left corner of the label. Therefore it was made in Hong Kong. Not a science. Cataloging collectibles is not a fucking science, no matter how accurate your shit is. So then I don't know. It's funny. It's almost like Nazis rebranding themselves at times. I pick on them about it because it's like, you guys did so many horrible fucking things in the name of your field. And then you come along later and just be like, well, actually we're the good guys now. It's like, dude, you're still wearing the same fucking armband, bro. It's yeah. Say, to relabel yourself. It's fuck. I mean, if you're at the very least.
And at the same time, obviously it's not the same individuals, but intellectual and the academic like line between the people who are doing phrenology within archaeology and the eugenicists and all these people, those people were the advisors and bosses of later archaeologists who were then the bosses and the advisors of later archaeologists down the line, however long it goes to the individuals of today. It might just be like two people of separation, but that is baked into the field. That's in the field. It has to be, because the field is created by people and the line of those people goes straight to them. So whether or not they admit it's in there, it's in there. It's in the DNA of the field based on the people and their influence.
No, I completely agree with you. Really quickly, should answer local enterprise broadcast. Thank you very much for the super chat, bro. Professor Dave, to be entertaining. I did like his moon landing video about Bart Sibrel. I think he's more of a space nerd than a rock nerd. I agree with Dan that Flint and his relationship is transactional. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, is that if he was like, I know that there's certain fields of this stuff, of certain fields of science that I don't know. Like when it comes to physics, if you watch my video talking about the physics stuff, I'm very clear. I don't fucking know enough about this stuff to weigh in on it heavily. I'm not going to, expertly not in a debate, but I know that that's where I'm at. And I think that Dave would benefit a lot from like realizing his limitations. Yeah, there's a lot of things you can read about, but there's some fields that it's easy to read how a formula works. It's easy to read how carbon dating works. It's easy to read how photosynthesis works. It's not easy to sit down and understand in an afternoon how stratigraphy works, even though the law of stratigraphy is very simple. But what is a law in geology becomes a good rule of thumb in archaeology. They have to account for all kinds of micro things that in geology they don't have to account for at all. But for instance, I wanted to bury a treasure. I wanted to bury a gold coin, and I made it did a very careful job of digging a straight pit down, and I replaced the soil in clumps just where I took them out of. It's not going to be recognizable as a man-made hole in one generation, and in 1,000 years from now, it's going to be lost.
Actually, it probably would be recognizable, probably would be recognizable 1,000 years. Like, and this is one of those things where like you wouldn't know, but that soil that would then be backfilled would almost definitely have a different character and texture and color than the soil around it. So they would be able to tell. This is how they can also tell, like, if there was a wood beam in the ground and you're digging in, you're going to be able to tell when you're scraping down 10 centimeters at a time, most likely, that there was something there. It would be called an archaeological feature, and that would be marked down on whatever documents they're producing. But people wouldn't know that unless they do archaeology. But the mainstream is not going to communicate that to you because it's ammo that you can use to be better informed and better deproved.
Well, no, and I understand I understand that like they've got ways of finding post holes and pits and things like that. But I'll make it even a simpler thought experiment. I go to a wall in my backyard. The wall was 1,000 years old. It's Hadrian's Wall. I go to that wall and at a 45-degree angle right at the foundation, I dig with a spade, a small spade. I just dig one round piece of dirt. I pull this round plug out. I put a coin under it, and I put that plug of dirt back in. 1,000 years from now, that's not going to show. It's going to be the same dirt as the surrounding soil and everything else. And it's going to put a coin under that wall that is not contemporary with the construction of that wall. And right. So I that's a very unique set of circumstances, but it could happen. In geology, that could not happen. On a geological right. level, you're not going to have, unless the Anunnaki are real, there's nobody going to come down and fucking scoop big chunks and change the way things are pointed. So that's why I say in archaeology, it's less of a law than it is in geology. And archaeology suffers from that in so many ways because it's a study of fucking human behavior, man. In a lot of ways, it's just a study of humanity. And humans are tricky. We lie, we sneak, we steal, we don't even know for certain, like casualty numbers for aircraft in battles in World War II. All right? Right. And these are fucking airplanes. These aren't people. They lose entire fucking planes from the records. How the fuck does that happen? Because people do people stuff, man.
Right. Maybe there's a stowaway. Maybe someone came back, didn't know, got somewhere. Yeah. There's plenty of things. And unfortunately, a lot of archaeology, a lot of the arguments made in archaeology are drawing complete evidence from incomplete data. Or complete arguments from incomplete evidence.
Yeah, and that's and again, that, you know, gaining some evidence and saying this is interesting, this could be, but we don't know for sure, is great. That's fine. That's acceptable. Gaining some evidence and saying I'm pretty certain that this means X, Y, or Z, that's acceptable. Gaining some evidence and say I'm so certain that this means X, Y, or Z, so fuck your hypothesis. It's just it doesn't work because of X, Y, or Z.
And you're racist.
Oh, and you're racist. Yes, your hypothesis is also associated with racist. It's like, dude, yeah, that the racism thing just that will never cease to be hilarious to me. It's like, dude, you fucking guys, literally most of your universities here in the States still are not in compliance with NAGPRA. Shut up. We're so you guys are all racist. It's like, dude, my closets, the worst thing that you might find in there is a fucking movie that's like off color. Not going to find any illegally to have immorally obtained indigenous bones. So shut the fuck up about which one of us is racist. It's just the most. Dude, your cat keeps having me looking around my floor. That jingling bell. I've looked down the floor like, yes, I've looked at the floor like 1,000 fucking times, man, because it keeps coming in my left ear. And I'm like,
what? I'm so sorry. Why? No, that shouldn't be audible on this.
I'm like, is there a bell hanging off of my microphone cord? What the hell? Oh, my belt unbuckled? What's going on here?
Maggie, chill out. It's okay. I'm sorry. I can't keep
No, I don't have movies from 1991. I've got shit that's fucking horrible, guys. I did. She got you.
She just jumped right up. God, she 3 months old, little toddler. Yeah, I love my cat. I love Maggie. Oh, yeah.
Cats are awesome.
She's not acting very regal like her name. I did want to say something. They have literal skeletons in their closet. Literal indigenous skeletons in their closet. So take care of that before you start concerning yourself with a 70-something-year-old man who's married to a South Asian woman and how he's racist because he cited some guy who was a prestigious professor 150 years ago and part of your history, not ours.
Yes, there is, Rock. Yeah, no, you're dead on. I'll tell you what, honestly, one of a great example of how they did real damage, lasting damage. Do you know what Kachina dolls are?
Yes, I do. Okay. From the same culture that this.
Yeah. All right. Then, and yet, as an anthropologist, you're probably aware that the Kachina dolls we have today are way different than the Kachina dolls they had 200 years ago. Like vastly different. The ones we have now are statues made to sell to tourists.
White people like me.
Yeah.
Artifacts.
The original ones were just little corncob dolls that were made as effigies of these gods, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when the beginning of the noble savage thing started, and then it was like all the anthropologists are lamenting the death of the Native American culture, Kachina yeah. dolls became focused on in the early 1900s, became focused on as one of the prime collectibles. And this became a very expensive collectible. And now they don't make Kachina dolls like they did Nomo. They make them the way that honkies want them made. And right. that right. is really like you want to talk. That's anthropology that fucking its own field and literally right. destroying what it sees, what it claims to try to protect. and it's that short-sighted because there are a bunch of fucking collectors, not all of them, not you. You're not a collector, you dirty collector, well, you get what I'm saying though. It's not like the collectible side of it's not a science.
Yeah, and it's so culture, one of the main, like there are different definitions of culture, but one of the main definitions of culture, whether physical culture, which I would call not necessarily culture itself, but the these are the physical representations of culture. Culture is dynamic. I don't know if you heard that, but
yes, regardless, it's a cat making noise. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Culture
is dynamic.
It's dynamic, which means that it's ever changing. And culture is going to change in response to the physical and the human environment around it. So when you introduce capitalism, or even we won't even say capitalism, but a market economy, that's going to have effects on a culture. If you introduce new materials, that's going to have an effect on the culture. A good example of this from earlier would be, I don't know if you knew this, but I made, and by make, I mean, I dug out and burned down based on traditional-ish methods, a 16th century dugout canoe.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about
that. That was made by Algonquin Native Americans. What? Sorry?
I remember you telling me that when we were in Scottsdale.
Right.
But so go ahead.
This, the canoe that I made, I was trying to find the oldest archaeological find that I could. So dated through dendrochronology, this was a 16th into 17th century canoe. And what I was going for was a canoe that was Algonquin in origin that was not affected by the new materials that the English and the Dutch and the French were bringing in. Because as soon as the English and the French and the Dutch come in, this starts affecting the construction of these canoes, not necessarily in a bad way, because before this, they have stone and they have wood, they have chert, quartz, they have these different materials. They don't have copper or iron, at least in any significant way, especially the Algonquins. But once they have some of this metal coming in, they start trading for this metal, and immediately they incorporate it into the designs of these mostly wooden dugout canoes. And they're able to trade for it. In the case of the Kachina dolls, adding in this market, the free market that they have, that incentivizes people who have the skill of creating Kachina dolls, which were up until then sacred objects that would have been created for a spiritual purpose within likely an animistic culture. These become products within a new culture of market-based economy that allows them to trade this for sustenance. And this yeah. incentivizes their production. And as a result of incentivizing the production, this then becomes the primary output of Kachina dolls. And eventually, based on public knowledge of Kachina dolls being based around these dolls produced for the market economy, that becomes, in the public eye, the view of what a Kachina doll is. And that is a destruction and a changing of culture that is a neutral thing, but if you add values on it, I think it's probably a bad thing. It destroys the original intention in the original production, and it makes them into something that is not only different than it was before, like the canoes, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Eventually they go out of practice altogether based on further market formists. Yeah. And now people don't really know how to make them, but it changes them in a way that is diametrically opposed to the original intention of the Kachina dolls. And that is, to me, the death of a culture, and extraordinarily negative. Yeah, the same thanks. Thing happened in the Coast Salish. Although this, for the Coast Salish, they used to have these sacred dogs, woolly dogs, that was an integral part of many different Coast Salish peoples. And they would be, these dogs would be treated like royalty, fed, and their fur would be sheared to be mixed in with other types of fur and made into blankets that were considered sacred. And both through intentional destruction by Indian agents of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, as well as through this introduction of the market economy, these blankets go out of practice. And it's a loss of the culture. They stop caring for the dogs because the culture stops being based around this, I think less animistic for them, but somewhat animistic understanding of these dogs as family members to them. And they are instead buying blankets. And they're this this culture, this tradition that had been passed down from the upper class women in these cultures was lost in just about 150 years, unfortunately.
Yeah, it takes no time. Rebecca says it reminds her of the kitschy shit at Chichen Itza, which, yeah, very yes. similar. Very similar.
Yeah, and I have some of that stuff. I mean, this bracelet is literally kitschy shit from Chichen Itza. And you can get stuff in different places, but a lot of the times, instead of hand producing them, it's easier for these vendors to just mass sell and mass produce objects from imported from China or imported from Vietnam or wherever they can get it made and sold in a context where sold by Mayan people in a Mayan context, but not produced by what I assume in the past would have been Mayan artisans that are no longer producing those things. And that's a loss of authenticity, like these Mayan masks behind me that might also be literally from Chichen Itza. But I knew that when I bought them, you know.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, that's very sadly, you know, it's the way that collectibles always end up. Collectibles follow a pattern like this. You always see it the same way. So the beginning's rare. To take the Kachina dolls. The Kachina dolls are rare. They're made for ceremonial purposes. There's not a whole lot of them made because they only make them for a few things. So you go in and you buy a few of them, and then more people want them, and then more people want them, and pretty soon they're mass producing the things, like you say, and they're not even making them the same way anymore. And this happens with comic books. Fucking, you go back to the 50s, nobody was saving comic books and putting them in bags and boards, but when I was a kid, we were all doing that. But when I was a kid, we weren't putting our Nintendo games and saving them still sealed, but nowadays people do that. It's the shit ends up on its ear over and over and over again. What was once used becomes sacred, becomes valued for a monetary reason, and now it becomes created as a trade good. That's going to always happen. So it's funny to me that, you know, anthropology goes and shits itself on that one, because, I mean, they could have seen this coming, right? They do. But again, this is the early days of science. It's really funny when you think about it. Science isn't very old. When we go 1,000 years in the future, we are still in the early days of science right fucking now.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much. But we're probably going to get going here shortly. We've been talking for a couple hours now, and I do have other things to do, and I'm sure you do too. There's a cat that once fed something besides your fingers.
I mean, she just got her food, but yeah. I guess I'm looking down. She ate all her food. She just wants attention.
And I've got a video to finish and some other stuff too, but I wanted to get together and chat with you. I'm trying to do a live stream a week again and get back into the swing of things.
Call on me whenever you need. Great to talk to you again, man. And I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Do you want to hop off right now, or do you want
to? I'll give it a go ahead. Why don't you tell people where else to find you at and stuff? Besides, I got your YouTube link below.
Yeah, YouTube and Twitter are the main ones. I got my Discord linked. Most of the people, I haven't been advertising my Discord, so most of the people in there are long term people. Like I saw in the chat, JC, Diego, some of my biggest friends and supporters, Shaman, I saw down there. And Rebecca seems to have been here the whole time. Thank you for that. But yeah, Twitter is ill_scholar. And YouTube, illegitimate scholar.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Stank. Thank you, everybody. There's so many of you that have been watching and paying attention and following for so long, anything. And thanks for taking the time to pop in here, Sam. This is really awesome. Make sure and subscribe to him. The link's down at the top below. Just click on that. I really appreciate you being on here, and we'll have to do this again here soon.
Yep. Thanks a lot for having me again, Dan. Good to see you.
Yep. Take care, everyone. All right.